change that I've ever gone through since I've been on the path. And so if I seem strange or different or in different moods or seem to be any kind of way other than smiling all the time, make that okay with you. Okay? Because I'm really going through a deep emotional change and I don't need to try to be positive smiling every second. But it doesn't mean that I don't know what's going on. That I'm not letting myself have that experience. And to be able to have that experience around you would be, to me, the safest way to make the change. It's around people that share my goal and that I love and that love me. So, I know I'm making a choice between two worlds. You know, it's like, after all these years of working on the course and doing the course and doing the course, I'm right at the branching of the road. I'm right at the borderland. I'm right at that place where you really have to practice what you preach. Okay? So my experience is presenting me with situations that the only way out is the truth. I'm going to have to love somebody.
There you go, good idea.
I'm really going to have to trust. I'm really going to have to believe there is a God that's really there. So, you have never seen me as dedicated to hearing this material as you are seeing me now, so take advantage of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're going to be on The Ego's Use of Guilt, page 83. And I'm going to do two versions, one that you see before you on the page, and then the same paragraph coming back using the Holy Spirit's modern language definitions of those terms. So you're going to hear it the way it's classically written, and then you're going to hear it read to you using its own definitions of the words you just read. You follow what I'm saying? Not your definition of the words you just read. I'm going to share with you its definition of the words you just read. And instead of analyzing it, just hear it. And it's going to get so intense that you may be tempted to interrupt me. I want to ask you to hold it until I stop and go, okay, open for questions. Would y'all be willing to do that? Even if you're about to burst. Okay, you know what I'm saying? You're like bursting, you know. You know, okay. The Course in Miracles says that when your ego hears anything that is threatening to it, it tries to disrupt communication. So probably the exact passage that you're feeling the biggest need to interrupt me on is exactly the thing that you needed to hear that a part of you don't want you to hear. And your question is to interrupt that communication, not to get a real answer. That's what the Course says. Don't take it personal. It ain't me now. Okay, I'm just saying what the book says. But sometimes people act like I'm saying it and they get like they want to get me. Okay, so that's what I'm going to read it, okay? Is that cool? Okay. Perhaps some of our concepts will become clearer and more personally meaningful if the ego's use of guilt is clarified. The ego has a purpose, just as the Holy Spirit has a purpose. The ego's purpose is fear, because only the fearful can be egotistic. The ego's logic is as impeccable as that of the Holy Spirit, because your mind has the means at your mind's disposal to side with heaven or earth as your mind elects. But again, remember that both heaven and earth are in you. So, here we go again. The fearful man's use of guilt. Perhaps some of our ideas will become clearer and more personally meaningful if your own fearful man's use of guilt is clarified. Your fearful man has a purpose, just as your loving man has a purpose. The purpose of your fearful, guilty man is to make you feel fear. The purpose of the part of your mind that doesn't love you, its purpose is to make you feel afraid. There is a part of your mind with the purpose of making you feel afraid. Because it's only those who are afraid that can feel like they're all alone. So if I want to be all alone, I have to be afraid. So there's a part of my mind that has the purpose of making me feel afraid so that I can think I'm all alone. Now, your fearful mind's logic is as impeccable as your sane mind's logic, because your mind has the means at its disposal to side with love or to side with fear as your mind elects. But remember that both love and fear are in you. Abundance and lack are in you. Remember, both guilt and innocence are in you. And your mind has at its disposal the means to side with either one of them. But remember, there's a part of your mind that wants to make you afraid all the time so that you would think you are alone. And so it uses guilt to do that. And if you understood what I just said, then some of these ideas will become easier and easier and clearer to you. The course will become clearer to you when you realize that there's a part of you that likes to make you afraid. But there's also a part of you that likes to make you unafraid. But both of them are in you. Okay, paragraph over. Any questions? Any comments about that paragraph?
So if you're in fear, like I am today, that's just the part of my mind trying to screw around with me. Right.
That's exactly what it is, very poetically spoken. It's a part of your, you have a part of your mind that's trying to screw around with you. But there's a part of your mind that also is about bringing you all the sanity and all the joy and all the peace and all the love you desire. But both of those parts are in you. But there's a part of you that has the purpose of scaring you.
Does a damn good job.
Okay, all right. Okay. How many people in the room would be willing to admit that they have experienced a part of them that tries to scare them? Don't tell me we can't have 100% participation regardless of age, creed, color, sex. That was just a miracle. You were in a room full of people where everybody agreed. That was a miracle. Don't look at that as like a little light, little thing. That what you just saw was a miracle. Anybody else before I go to the next paragraph? Just notice the difference between when I read it the way it was and when I read it using its own definitions, how it turned into a whole other thing.
Yes.
And I promise you I'm not using definitions I made up. Okay. Well, let's go on then. It says, now, this is deep. It says, in heaven there is no guilt, because the kingdom is attained through the atonement which releases you to create. The word create is appropriate here because once what you have made is undone by the Holy Spirit, the blessed residue of what you have made that has been undone by the Holy Spirit is restored and therefore continues in creation. What is truly blessed is incapable of giving rise to guilt. And what is truly blessed must give rise to joy. Joy makes it invulnerable to the ego, because joy's peace is unassailable. Joy's peace is invulnerable to disruption, because it is whole. Guilt is always disruptive. Anything that engenders fear is divisive, because anything that engenders fear obeys the law of division. So if the ego is the symbol of the separation, then your ego is also the symbol of guilt. Guilt is more than merely not of God. Guilt is the symbol of attack on God. Now, attacking God is a totally meaningless concept except to the ego. But do not underestimate the power of your ego's belief that you have attacked God. The belief that you have somehow attacked God is the belief from which all guilt really stems. Okay. Now I'll read some of the definitions. In reality, there is no guilt, because reality is attained through the undoing of fear, which releases you to create. The word create or extend, that's what create means in the course. The word create or to extend is appropriate here, because once all this stuff that you have made is undone by your sane mind, the blessed residue of what you've done is restored, and therefore what's left in your mind after it's been corrected continues in creation. What's been left in your mind after your correction, it continues in creation. The blessed residue of what you have been thinking, the once it's been corrected by the Holy Spirit, it then continues in extension of love. What is truly blessed is incapable of giving rise to guilt. So if it's truly blessed, you could never feel guilty about it. And if it's truly blessed, it's going to always make you feel joy. When it's something that you don't feel any guilt about, when it's something that's not giving rise to guilt, that makes it invulnerable to the fear, to the ego. Because something that is truly blessed, its peace is unassailable. That means that when it's truly blessed, it cannot be attacked. When it's truly blessed, there is nothing that can disturb it. When it's truly blessed, there is nothing that can disturb its peace. When it's truly blessed, it could never disturb your peace. Anything that's truly blessed never disturbs your peace. Anything that's truly blessed, an experience that is truly blessed, a relationship that's truly blessed, never disturbs your peace. A love that's truly blessed never disturbs your peace. Something that is truly blessed is invulnerable, cannot be destroyed, because it's whole and complete. Anything that is whole and complete cannot be destroyed. Anything that is whole and complete cannot be destroyed. Feeling guilty is always disruptive to your peace. Feeling guilty is disruptive to your total fulfillment. Feeling guilty disrupts your feelings of total fulfillment. Guilt disrupts your feelings of fulfillment. Guilt disrupts your feelings of peace. Guilt disrupts your peace. Guilt, feeling guilty disrupts your peace. Feeling guilty disrupts your peace. Feeling afraid disrupts your peace. So anything that makes you feel afraid is divisive. Anything that makes you feel afraid is divisive, because anything that makes you feel afraid is obeying the law of division. You will be separated from what makes you feel afraid. You will be separated from what makes you feel afraid. You will be separated from what makes you feel afraid, because fear is divisive. So if your fear is the symbol of your feeling separate, then your fear is also the symbol of your feeling guilty. So guilt is more than merely something that doesn't come from love. Guilt is more than something that merely doesn't come from the Creator. Guilt is something, is more than something that merely doesn't come from the truth. Guilt is the feeling that you have disobeyed God. Guilt is the feeling that you have disobeyed love. Guilt is the feeling that you've disobeyed your Creator. Guilt is the feeling that you are disobeying your own happiness. Guilt is the feeling that you have when you're disobeying your own happiness. Guilt is the feeling that you have when you're breaking the rules for your own happiness. Fear is the feeling that you have when you're breaking the rules. Fear is the feeling that you have when you're breaking the rules of your own happiness. Fear is the feeling that you feel when you're breaking the rules of your own desires. Now, attacking the Creator, being able to hurt God, is a totally meaningless concept except to an insane mind. An insane mind thinks that it can upset God. An insane mind thinks that it can upset God. But don't you underestimate the power of an insane man's belief that we have disobeyed God. Do not underestimate the power of believing that we have disobeyed God. Or do not underestimate the power of believing that an insane man believes it has disobeyed God. We're living in a world where insane minds believe they have disobeyed God. The truth. Love. The belief that we somehow or another disobey God or attack God, the belief that somehow I've done something wrong, that's the belief from which all your guilt is really coming from. Your guilt is coming from you believing that you have done something wrong. You have disobeyed God. You are not being yourself. So all guilt comes from that. Feeling like I've disobeyed God. I've attacked my Creator. That's what it says. Hey, any thoughts about that?
I have no problem believing that.
What is it you have no problem believing?
I say I don't have any problem believing that.
That's what I'm saying. What is it you don't have any problem
believing?
Well,
it's all guilt. I mean, I know my guilt. Mm-hmm. And I can take it right back to that I disobeyed God. God did not want me to do that. Why did I do that?
Thank you. Anybody else have any thoughts about it? Remember, it's not about, believe me, y'all, I don't have any more investment in whether anybody believes me or whether anybody agrees with me. I swear to God I don't. Because it's not going to be real communication as long as you think that what you say matters to somebody.
So if I do something I feel guilty for, if I do something and I feel guilty for it, it's not that which I did, it was that I believe I disobeyed God.
Yeah, which in God, and God is the truth. God is the love that created you. In other words, God is the happiness that you are. So when you're feeling guilty, you know you must be disobeying your own rules for your happiness. If you're feeling angry, you know you must be disobeying your own rules for peace.
So I had to call that friend back, and I feel guilty for that. How was that disobeying God?
See, that is not about you figuring out how it was disobeying God.
Okay.
That's the trick.
Okay.
The trick is to get to the place that you realize when you're not happy, you're disobeying the laws of your happiness. You're doing something that's the opposite of what gives you peace for real.
So the striking craziness of it is many times I haven't done a thing that would make me happy because I felt that was somehow simple because I wasn't taking care of it. I didn't have to take care of it. Some poor you. And that's crazy, huh?
Well, remember that there's a part of the mind that has the purpose of making you feel afraid and guilty. So it has to do that by getting you to judge the things that you do in such a way that you'll make yourself feel bad about them. The part of you that is trying to make you feel guilty tries to make you feel bad about whatever you do. That's its job. And when you listen to it, you never feel good about anything that you're doing. That's how you know you're listening to it. which means you're disobeying your laws of your happiness by listening to the part of your mind that's trying to make you miserable, is disobeying the laws of your happiness. Listening to the part of your mind that's trying to make you miserable is disobeying the laws of God, is disobeying God.
I had this experience that when I knew I was insane. I mean, and I was so insane and I was so pissed off at God that I had to leave the house and go to the park so people didn't call the police. So I started to tell God how screwed up he did.
Mm-hmm.
And but in the exhaustion of that insanity is where I finally found some peace. You know, and for maybe 8 minutes, I had some clarity. I term it, although I don't know exactly what that is, I experienced perfection for a short period of time.
Congratulations.
And that's why I keep doing this. It seems like, well, I have to be crazy before I can find this peace.
He keeps telling us over and over again that the peace or the sanity is behind our insanity. But we're not willing to look at our insanity so that we can get to the peace on the other side.
Okay.
And so what you did was you looked at your insanity. And then you didn't deny your insanity in that moment, and your anger in that moment, or how you were seeing God in that moment, so you went right through to the other side. They call it stand up against the wall. Because when you're up against the wall, the temptation is to try to get off the wall, which means to go back to what you just got through doing. But it's only when you stay up against the wall that you go through to the other side and you least expect it. But you have to stay up against the wall, which means you're not going to do what you did before that you knew hurt you. So you're not going to go back into the same thing that hurt you again. You're going to stay up against the wall. Even though it looks like all you can see is what's been happening to you, you're not going to go back to it.
Is that why when you have what they call like the dark night of soul, where you just have a really, really bad time, I mean, and you're just so into it and you're so deep into it, and then after that you feel so much better, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you just dove into it, you feel it, you know how angry you are, how pissed off you are, and it seems to me that's when I take my biggest steps,
just like what he's saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like right after I just had I just can't.
Well, that's what I was saying tonight when I came in. It's like after 25 years of studying the course, sometimes you know people forget that as long as you can see me, I'm going through my different levels too. And I feel like and the Holy Spirit told me that I was going through the first part of an initiation. And it's like, okay, you know. But I need to get in touch with this stuff about, okay, what part of my mind is it that wants to make fear, how it operates, so I won't get caught up in any fear that might come up in my own transformation. Because I was so serious about going through the dark night of the soul that I was born black. I did not want to forget my purpose.
So when you feel like that fear is coming into you, but you don't want to get caught up in it, isn't there some extent where you need to see what that fear is so that you can get up against the wall, like you said, and then go through it?
The Course says the more you look at your fear, the less you will see it.
Yeah.
The more that you look at your fear, the more that you look at the illusion, the more that you look at the guilt. Why? Because the more you look at it, the more you're going to do the thing that will keep you from experiencing it again.
Right.
The more you look at it, the more you're going to start choosing differently. So the more you look at it, the less you're going to see it, because you're going to be doing less things to see it.
Right, okay. But you need to look at it without
starting
to analyze
it. Right, and see, we keep forgetting that the first part of analyze is anal. You know, and then we forget that the last part says lies. You know, you're being anal, and it's just a bunch of lies.
Well, you know. Can fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, more and more of my classes will be total torture for the analyzers. Okay? Which means it's going to be a big analyzer dropout. Okay? But the ones who are like at this point in their life that they know that they want the answer more than they want to analyze it, they're going to be hanging in here with me so tough, it's going to be unfreaking believable. And that's going to be the best course class we could ever imagine. Yeah. It's the one where everybody trusts me enough to just let it come through me so they can hear it and make up their own mind about what it means.
Earl, my dilemma is that I still think, even though I'm getting into this, I think I've been in the dark night of the soul forever, and I feel like I'm not making any progress. I'm not seeing it outside of me, and I still feel like there's this little part of me that I'm thinking God is somewhere outside of me and thinking that He's punishing me. And I know He's punished. I know.
No, I'm just listening. I know that's strange when somebody does that.
I still think that I've done something so wrong, and yet I can't.
I know, hell, I've been studying the course for 25 years. I'd at least have a Rolls Royce.
At least.
That's what the ego says.
That's the insanity, is that I feel so guilty, and I still think that God's punishing me, and that's what you're saying, is that... To look at that.
Mm-hmm. That is where your guilt is really coming from. That your guilt and fear is coming from the belief you are disobeying your Creator. Somehow or another, you are not being honest. You are not doing what's right. You are not doing the truth. That's where all guilt comes from. I did something wrong. That's what he's saying. That's all the book is. He says, and that idea is divisive, and that idea is what feeds your fear.
So if I feel really angry at myself because I've identified with something that's not real at all,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I get into rage,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
out of my rage.
I bet it's cute. As long as it's not directed toward me, I bet you I can see it really correctly.
So how am I supposed... How am I supposed to look at that? Do I just look at it?
Just look at the rage, or just... Okay, let's ask the Holy Spirit. Let's ask your higher self. How should you look at the rage? I have rage. How should I look at it? I'm upset with myself. Tell me how I should look at it.
Just let it pass by.
Okay, I feel bad right now. I really feel bad. I'm really feeling afraid right now. How should I look at it? Help me.
Just look at it. I don't want to say closely look at it, because that'll be...
Just don't think about what to say. Just say it.
You're innocent.
Okay. Well.
No. Yeah. See, in other words, what we want to do in order to have a healing is get to the point that you will say whatever you think without thinking about and judging it before you say it to me, so that I'll get an honest communication from you.
Okay.
Because most communications that we get from each other are never direct communications. They're always communications that we patched up first.
Yeah,
or try to fix up and make sure we can. So whatever you were to tell me about how I should have dealt with my situation, that would have been exactly what I needed to hear right then. Or it wouldn't have come out of your mouth.
Okay.
So you can't say anything really wrong to me in truth.
Okay.
So also with me, always practice just saying what you think and what you feel without feeling like you have to alter it at all. Or second guess it, or was that stupid, or was that dumb, or should I say it that way? I love it when I get uncensored communication from people when they're not trying to be spiritual, or not trying to say it right, or trying to fix it up to sound good. I can feel them. I'm going to explain it to y'all, but I know y'all know what I'm talking about. You can feel them. People that give you an honest communication without censorship, they go straight to your heart. I mean, I don't care what they're saying, whether it's their anger, I don't care if it's their sadness, I don't care what it is. If it's really coming from what they honestly feel in a moment, like it was when you started out talking about how you felt like you had disobeyed God, the more you talked about it, the more I could feel that you were just saying honestly how you felt in that moment. You weren't caring about how it looked to nobody else or what sounded right, you know. And when you were doing that, I was being healed. It didn't even matter to me what you said, as long as you were being sincere. But the more you look at your fear, the more you look at the fact that you think you disobeyed God, the less you're going to see that in yourself, because you're going to start doing the things that really give you peace. Okay, that's, you know, you with me on that? Yeah, in other words, you're not going to jeopardize your freedom for anything, for anyone.
Thank you.
I realize that every time I go through a fear, every time I go through something that frightens me, it's always because I put that thing before my freedom. I always realize that later on. It's like, wow, whenever I make a mistake, it was something that I valued more than my own freedom and my own joy and my own happiness. It was something that made me compromise. It was something that made me stop looking out for my own best interest. It was something that I stopped at that I shouldn't have stopped at. Because now I feel fear, which means that now I have limited myself in some way. So I can always take...
You're trying to be real, but then there's a part of you that's like slapping you, like saying, you know, before you even said what's real.
The part of your mind whose purpose is for you to feel fear. The part of your mind that wants you to feel fear is going to always slap you before you try to be real. Because the more real you are, the less your fear is going to exist. And your fear, in order to preserve itself, has to keep you afraid in order to keep itself going. Or else it disappears. Because fear is a thought like any other thought. In order for it to be strong, you have to feed it. And your fear feeds off fear that it makes up for you.
So I have retroactive fear sometimes. Now, I'll show up as my authentic self because I've, you know, the fear doesn't show up ahead of time. I'll just, and then afterwards, I'll go, oh, I can't believe I did that.
Okay, so that same voice... at the same purpose, even if it was later. It was to make you feel fear. Sometimes, you know, when you feel guilty about what you do, then you can always tell, because when you finish it, you will make yourself feel disturbed about it. And that's how you know that it wasn't a blessed experience for you. It's not a blessed experience when you feel guilty about it. That's how you can tell it's not, the cults will call it an unholy experience. Because you feel guilty about it. If you spent the night with somebody and you wake up the next morning and you feel guilty about it, that wasn't a blessed experience for you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's all it means. It doesn't mean that you're sinful. It doesn't mean that you're going to be destroyed or that you're no longer loved by the Creator. It just means that you're making yourself feel bad. So when you do that, you're making it an unblessed experience for you. Because if it was a blessed experience for you, you wouldn't feel any guilt about it. And no more than that, when you're with someone and is really blessed, or in a situation that's really blessed, the Course says not only would you not feel guilty, nothing could destroy it. Nothing could disturb it. If you was in a truly blessed relationship, there wouldn't be any such thing as jealousy. It would never occur to you, because your peace in the relationship would be so great that it would be invulnerable.
I have a question. Is it fine?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, yes, we can do it. Yeah, there is. We have the clock here.
I've got some fear coming up around my daughters going to Costa Rica. Okay. My two daughters are leaving tonight at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you this. This goes back, let's just say, if I'm analyzing it, and I'm sure I am, about losses for me.
Okay.
But, at the same time, I've got a couple little guilt things. Does the guilt play a part in me reliving the fear of losses, and then a frickin' hurricane's coming? You know, and I've got people calling me. Do they have a layover? How does this serve me? How in the hell does this serve me? Click!
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Now, I've hung up on three people, and one of them was my boss. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Is the guilt around whatever it is stirring up, or is it about the loss? And
They're both the same.
Are they?
Yeah, the feeling of possible loss and the guilt. If I really felt like that was a blessed experience that they were on,
yeah.
I would feel no fear, and my peace would be so strong, it would be invulnerable, and therefore it would also extend to them.
Cool.
And at the same time, don't fight your feelings of fear about something happening to your daughter in a hurricane. Just understand that those two thoughts do not conflict with each other. They're just two thoughts you're having in your mind. And they're both there. You see what I'm saying? So you don't have to be fighting your not wanting to feel the fear that you know you fear because it's your child, and you don't want your child to be right. You don't want your child. Okay, that's a thought.
Yeah.
Okay, let that thought be. And then he's saying, now on the other hand, if I can try to tune into the part of me that understands that this is a blessed experience, and yes. I don't perceive my daughter's best interest, and I don't know what any of this means.
Yeah. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Both of those thoughts in your mind. And it's okay for you to have both of them. How about that for a relief? You can go, you can feel what you feel about your daughter at whatever level that you feel it. And you can also say to yourself, I want to see my daughter as in a blessed experience right now, because if she could be in an experience that is blessed, I know she would be safe. And I know that it's possible for her to have blessing in that situation because love is everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, y'all ready to go on to the next part? Okay, donkey. All right, do I need smelling sauce for the game? Everybody, everybody cool. I know. This is some cool stuff. You ready? I need some encouragement. You ready? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Now, the ego is the part of your mind that believes in division. How could part of God detach itself without believing it's attacking God? We spoke before the authority problem is based on the concept of usurping God's power. Your ego believes that you usurp God's power, that this is what you did, because your ego believes it is you. Your ego believes it is you. So if you identify with your ego, you must be seeing yourself as guilty. Whenever you respond to your ego, you will experience guilt. Whenever you respond to your ego, you will experience guilt. Whenever you respond to your false ideas, you will experience guilt. And you will fear punishment. The ego is quite literally a fearful thought. However ridiculous the idea of attacking God might be to the sane mind, never forget the ego is not sane. Your ego represents a delusional system, and your ego speaks for a delusional system. So listening to your ego's voice means that right now you believe it's possible to attack God, and that you believe that a part of God has been torn away by you. Fear of retaliation from God follows because the severity of your guilt is so acute that you must project your guilt. You're feeling so guilty that you got to project it on everybody else. Okay, here we go. Let's go back to this happy, uplifting paragraph. He says, okay, the fear in you is the part of your mind that believes in division. But how could part of everything detach itself without believing it's attacking everything? We spoke before the authority problem is based on the concept that you think you've somehow overthrown God's power. There's a part of you that believes that you have just overthrown God's power, because there's a part of you that believes that it is you. There's a part of you that believes it is you. The fearful part of you believes that it is actually you. So now you say you're afraid, because the fearful part of your mind actually thinks it's you. Every time you identify with your insane mind, every time you identify with your fearful mind, every time you identify with your separated mind, you must see yourself as guilty. So whenever you see yourself as guilty, you are identifying with your wrong mind. Whenever you see yourself as guilty, the Course calls the ego the wrong mind. So you must see yourself as guilty when you're listening to the wrong voice. You will see yourself as guilty when you're listening to the wrong voice. Some people say, well, if you didn't feel guilty, wouldn't you just go out and do anything? Of course, we go out and do anything because we feel guilty. The mind that doesn't feel guilty would never attack or hurt anybody, because the mind that feels innocent knows that that's the best way in the world to lose its own peace. Why would I make you feel guilty, and making you feel guilty is going to make me lose my peace? If I value my peace, I'm not going to spend no time trying to make you feel guilty, because making you feel guilty is just going to take away my peace. Because I got to get angry to do that. To do it for real. Fake guilt, that's okay. But if it's going to be some real guilt that I want to make you feel, then I got to get mad with you to do it. So every time I want to make somebody else feel bad, I have to make myself feel bad first. So whenever you're listening to your fearful mind, he says you will see yourself as guilty. Whenever you respond to the wrong voice, whenever you respond to your wrong voice, you will experience guilt. Whenever you respond to your wrong voice, you will experience guilt. And you can tell when you are responding to the wrong voice because you will be afraid of being punished. You will be afraid of being hurt. You will be afraid that something bad is going to happen to you if you're listening to the wrong voice. You will believe something bad could happen to you. If you're listening to the fearful voice, you'll believe that something can happen to you. If you're listening to your ego, you believe that you can be in danger. So how can I tell when I'm listening to my ego?
You're scared.
Thank you. It's just that simple.
Not only do you feel that something bad can happen, you feel something bad will happen.
Exactly. When you're listening to the part of you that is praising your fear.
Oh, man.
The Course says things that make you feel afraid are like saying, praise to the ego, praise to the ego, praise to the ego, praise to my fear, praise to my fear. Because I'm afraid of this, and I'm afraid of that, and I'm afraid of them, and I'm afraid of that. Praise to my fear. That's what the Course says. He's saying, praise to my ego. Can you see it? Can you see it? Praise to my fear. Okay? Then it says, and here's a great definition of the ego. It says, your ego is quite literally a frightening thought. Got it? Then he says, however ridiculous the idea of attacking an all-powerful creator might be to the sane man, never forget that the frightened mind is not sane. So a person who is afraid is insane in that moment. And a person who's feeling insane with fear in the moment, check that out, believes that it's possible to have their happiness taken away from them by somebody other than themselves. The man that's insane is the man that believes somebody else can make them unhappy.
Does that work the same way for making them happy too?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You can't make them happy, but you can give them a hell of an example. I can't make you happy, baby, but I'm gonna give you an example of what it looks like. Just watch me. You're seeing what you're missing. But I ain't joining you. But this is the line in the Course is so cold. Jesus said, you know, if you want to go off into misery, then I can't go with you. But I'll be here when you change your mind. And I went, oh, that's so cool. You know, I see you finna go off into this fearful place, but I'm not going to go with you. But I will still love you, and I'll be here for you when you change your mind. But I ain't going with you. No. Still with me now?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Course says that don't forget that a person that's afraid is not sane. A man that's afraid is not sane at that moment. He says, so your ego represents a delusional system, so your fear is speaking for a delusional system. Your anger is speaking for a delusional system. Your guilt is speaking for a delusional system. The Course says, we live in a delusional system. We live in a system that deludes. We are in a system of thinking that fools us all the time. We're in a system of thinking that deceives us all the time. We are in a system of thinking that tries to keep us afraid all the time. There's a part of us that speaks for the stuff that makes us afraid all the time. It's called the ego. It's the part of your mind that speaks to you about the stuff that makes you feel afraid. That's your ego's job. It speaks to you about the stuff to make you feel afraid. There's a part of your mind that has the assignment of telling you stuff that makes you feel afraid.
Gee, I thought that was TV.
That is the ego, too.
Mm-hmm.
The ego is the TV.
Yeah, I know.
Whenever you're gonna get to a point on your spiritual path that you will not run away from looking at the world, because you realize the world is teaching you everything you shouldn't do. So you know by watching it, you're being given very specific instructions about what not to do if you want to be happy. So you won't have to guess about it. The Course says that the world is exactly the opposite of the truth. So everything here takes a direction that's just the opposite of what's true. That when you look out in the world, all you're seeing is an example of what people who don't know how to really love each other act like.
It's everywhere.
Not, I said really love each other. I didn't say that it was not reflecting a world where people knew how to treat each other special and different. It's a perfect world to learn how to treat people special and different. But it's the worst example you could ever see of how to love each other. Because when I'm special with you, it is not real love. It is just a bargain. And it's a bargain made with guilt. Real love is so indestructible and so blessed that you could not feel anything in it that would disturb your peace. A real relationship will never make you afraid. And it was when I heard that in the Course that I realized I didn't have none. Because there simply was no one that I didn't have some kind of fear about, some kind of way about something. That there was no one that I was completely 100% through and through, up and down, completely open with.
So we practice in
the meantime. It's called, letting a person express themselves without feeling a need to correct them. Have you ever wondered why, no matter what we say, higher beings never say anything? Has it ever dawned on you all that no matter what you say, no matter what you do, in most cases, you don't hear a disembodied voice before you talking to you? You sound like you say something crazy, and you hear this voice, hey, you know better than that. You don't like have that voice boom out of your living room like that. Because you know that the more people are encouraged to say what they think and feel exactly as they think them and exactly as they feel them, the more honest representation you have of who you're with. And anything you do to inhibit a person from communicating with you is cutting yourself off from the information that you need in order to know how to deal with them. So you may think you're doing something great by correcting everybody around you, but what you're doing is interfering with the communication between them and you to let you know who they really are. So, I had a person, that one day, I've had so many different experiences teaching, And people would sometimes feel fear around me, or they'll feel cool around me, And the people that I love the most are the ones who, when they feel afraid, first of all, at some point they begin to think maybe the problems that they're in. That's like a brilliant step right there. They could just be misperceiving themselves, because there really wasn't anything to back up what they were feeling any fear about other than what they were telling themselves. Because nothing had physically happened actually to make them feel afraid. But the person that is blessed for you to be with is a person you would not feel guilty about anything you do with them. If they don't pass that test, they're not truly a blessed experience for you. If there's anything you can do with me that you feel guilty or afraid about, then you know that we don't have a completely whole love and blessed relationship, which means that there's a hole in our love, because there's a little area that you feel some guilt and fear with me about, so we got a hole in our love. And that hole in our love can allow fear and conflict to sometimes enter between us, because we got a hole in our love, which is the area of me that doesn't trust you. It is my hole with you. So a holy relationship would be a relationship where you have the purpose of patching up the holes.
That really explains why trust is such a...
But it has to be developed.
Yeah.
Trust has to be developed.
Right.
And the way for trust to develop is to recognize that you have distrust.
Yeah.
And to set the goal of going beyond the distrust. And then you make agreements with each other and you keep the agreements in order to have developed the trust. But you also learn how to love each other when you break the agreement, so that you won't lose your peace whether they keep the agreement, and you won't lose your peace whether they break the agreement. So you don't want to lose your peace for any reason, and you know there's probably going to be some times they break the agreement because you already have established you don't have complete love and trust yet. You knew that from the beginning. So I'm not looking for you to be perfect in a relationship with me, because I knew we had an imperfect love when we started out, and that's what we want to learn how to have together. Which means that there's going to be holes in yours from time to time, and there's going to be holes in mine from time to time, but the way we patch each other's hole is to not attack each other when something comes out of your hole.
When you understand that you cannot be harmed completely, then there's no need for trust.
They're the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. At the point that you feel total safety, it would be at the point you now have achieved total trust. And nothing can get in to disturb it, because there is no holes in the trust. There is nowhere in the trust where there is any distrust to let something happen between you. But if something happens and I don't trust and I do something that you didn't expect me to do, then I will trust you more if I can make a mistake and you will still love me, because you know I really didn't want to make the mistake, and that I want to go beyond my mistakes enough to now start behaving differently myself. So it's not just words. I'm going to do something to demonstrate that I've changed my mind. But I want your relationship with me to be valuable enough to you that you would be willing to help me go beyond my fears. But we are the same. I don't want to have a mate that's an unequal. I don't want to have a mate that's my teacher, unless I'm equally seen as just as much a teacher for them. No inequality, or there will be conflict. So to go out here and then form a relationship with somebody that you know do not see anything nearly the way that you see it any kind of way, and you're going to raise them up to where you are, is an egotistical perception of relationship.
Motivated by sex.
A lot of the times. Of course a lot of stuff is motivated by sex, you know. And it was so funny about sex, is that sex, as we look at it, is something that two bodies that don't exist does. So we're feeling guilty about something that's not even taking place with anything that's real and everlasting. I'm feeling guilty about what I did with a body that's not going to even be around for a long time. Now, what kind of sense does that make? It doesn't even exist. But I also know if I'm getting ready to do something with it and I feel any guilt and fear, then I'm not about to engage in what I consider to be a blessed relationship. And so therefore, in the name of my peace, I will not have sex with you. I will not do this with you. Why? Because I cannot experience it in total fearlessness, total guiltlessness, total peace and total trust that this is a totally blessed experience that I'm having that I couldn't possibly feel any guilt about later on.
Wish I'd have known that when I was 18.
But what's so cool about it is that you know it now. Because this is the only time there is. This is the present is your point of power.
Yeah.
Okay?
I need that.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna stop here. Woo! Jesus Christ. My God. Oh, God. Let me get the love offering basket. Oh, here it is. Please share with me. Thank you very much.
It's
very practical, and if you can keep it up some degree of core part of your brain to remember, then if it disturbs your peace, you might think twice about doing it. It's very practical application. Right. The Course in Miracles says there are four obstacles to peace. The first obstacle to peace is a desire to get rid of it. I'll say it again. So take a while to hear what the Course says. The first obstacle to you keeping your peace is your willingness to always give it up about one thing or another. That's what's keeping you from having it is your willingness to give it away. That's the first thing. I've got to make the decision to stop giving my peace away about everything that happens in my life. I've got to make the decision to stop giving my peace away about every little thing that happens all day long. I've got to make the decision to stop giving my peace away because of what other people are doing. I've got to stop giving my peace away. That's the first obstacle to peace, is my desire to give it away. Then he says the second obstacle to peace is my deep belief that the body is valuable for what the body offers. That it's all about the body. It's all the second obstacle of my piece is that it's all about the body. Something the body has, something the body does, something the body wants. That's my stage. It's all about the body. Can we see that? Something the body needs, something the body wants, something I want to do with my body. I got to get my body some kind of way. What's going to happen with my body? It's all about the body. Look at the commercials on TV and you know it's all about the body, right? He said that's the second obstacle to peace. Then he says the third obstacle to peace is my fear of death, my attraction to death, my attraction to guilt, he says, which is all the same thing. So the third thing that keeps you from feeling peaceful all the time is there's a part of you that, quite frankly, is afraid to die. And it's hard to feel peaceful all the time if you think you can be bumped off any second. Okay? So somehow or another, that doesn't go with feeling totally peaceful. Agree?
Yeah.
Then the last obstacle to peace is the fear you have of being happy, which he calls the fear of God. That the last obstacle of peace, you know what? You're afraid of love. You're afraid to be loved. You are afraid to be loved. You are afraid to be free. That's saying you are afraid to be free. You are afraid of love. You are afraid of your freedom. You are afraid of your happiness. And those are the four obstacles to peace. But you know how you get past them? Through your attraction to what's beyond them. You got to want what's beyond the thing that you're tempting to upset yourself about. You got to want the thing that's beyond always being concerned about your body. You got to want the thing that's beyond being afraid of dying. You got to go to the thing, want the thing that's beyond the fear of your own love and the fear of your own happiness. You got to want your own happiness more than you want all four of the obstacles. And it'll pull you right past all four of them.
Here's to that.
Yeah, that's a good thought, isn't it? I thought it was a cool thought. Thank you, brother. So let's get ready to take it in for a landing. Don't forget Sunday's 11 o'clock service at the church. You're invited to come to that. And I got a class. It's Sunday, 1 o'clock. And anybody else that's going through a big transformation and a big change in your experience and in yourself right now, I just want you to know, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. And I'm breathing, and I'm studying. And, as a matter of fact, I made a CD this afternoon the most powerful lessons in the Course that I could find. And I did it to my, recorded it to myself using my name. And then I listed it as Earl Purdy's Medicine. That's how I labeled the CD. You know, because I know that these are the thoughts that I need to hear as I go through my transformation so as not to be afraid all the time or to let the joy come in. I know that the truth is the only thing that takes you through the dark night of the soul. It's the only thing that moves you from fear to love. even when you don't believe it. You need to hear it. And so I know if the ego comes up, I can always push a button. I can always, I don't depend on me trying to think all the positive thoughts I can think if my fearful, guilty mind is acting up and I'm afraid about something. Click! And then I listen to my medicine. Earl, that's why I talk to myself, Earl, you know that you're totally sustained by the love of God, and this is just something to make you think that you're just a body, that you're not this unlimited being that you really are. You know this situation, there's another way to look at it. See what I'm saying? It's like, and see, and by putting it down, this situation or that situation, then anything that comes up, that can be the medicine for. And to hear it in your own voice is 10,000. No, you want to hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear it. You want to hear it in your voice. You want to, because I call my name. See, it's very personal. It's Earl Purdy. Earl, now you know Earl. You know, and I'm saying that, you know, boop, 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 somebody in the course. You know what I'm saying? And to hear that in my own voice, when my ego is telling me it's yang-yang stuff, then I'm hearing myself say, well, you know that's just an illusion in this situation. You see what I'm saying? But to do it in your own voice would be very symbolic of your willingness to have a physical change. And you need to do something physical to show you have faith in what you're trying to do.
Almost like your higher self is talking.
And that's what it feels like. Yeah, because it is my higher self talking to me when I'm in fear, listening to something I'm telling myself that's true about my own fear.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. And it'll take you right through it, or certainly make it a lot more of a peaceful journey. Because when you go into a whole new reality, there's a part of you that becomes afraid of the unknown. And I'm moving into a whole new level of my own feelings and emotions and consciousness and awareness. And it's not like anything I've ever experienced before. It's never presented me with the challenges that it's presented me in terms of going for the truth in myself. So you get to the point you actually are not philosophizing anymore. You're not analyzing anymore. You say this, I'm going to say this right now. You say, think this, I'm going to think this right now. That's where you get to when the truth really hits you. And it's really your time to go through to the other side. You don't have time to analyze. You just want to remember. All you want to do is remember the truth. You just want to remember that you're okay. You just want to remember that the truth is with you. You just want to remember that you're not alone. You just want to remember you're innocent. See, when you're really ready for a change, it's a remembering. It's not an analyzing. It's I need to remember the truth about myself.
That I know in my deepest heart. So just remember that.
Yeah, I got to remember. Because my fear is coming from forgetting. Don't forget, we are land, L-A-N-D, minds, M-I-N-D-S. Okay? Spiritual man on the way over, he said, you all are land minds. You are minds that think you are on land. You think you are physical. You are body. You are a land mind. And you all know that the land minds are unpredictable, and you also don't ever know when you're going to set one off. And that's what Spirit said to me. It was like, whoa! And I saw it, the truth of that. We are a bunch of land minds, and we don't know when we're going to set each other off. And that's what scares us. I will thank you, God. I'll see y'all next time. Yeah, appreciate that acknowledgement. I appreciate y'all. But listen to this stuff. If you get a chance, read The Ego's Use of Guilt, because I'm going to continue with it on Sunday. You know, and if you read the section before we go over it, it'll be so much more powerful and meaningful when we do it together.
Before we start, I just have to make it one more commercial for Gary's session. Because not only is Gary's session that makes it really important, but the CD that we make from it, I do listen to my own times. And it keeps bringing me back to that change I'm trying to make and the things I need to remember. And they're really very clear. They really are very helpful sessions if you haven't had one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.